This is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politics.
Eita, welcome to another edition of hashtag Politics on Wow, What a Week. My name is Fresh, his name is Botsang, and we're with you for the next hour or so. Brother B.
Good morning, Tato.
Or hopefully future Ambassador B.
Eish, bruh. After this week, I don't know. I had hopes, but I think I've pressed some poo-poo buttons. But yeah, we'll see.
If ever you were to be nominated to be ambassador anywhere, I mean, do you still have it in you to serve?
No, I do. I definitely do. Actually, my plan was I was going to retire from my current job at 55.
Okay.
And go back to diplomacy
at
that time. That was my life plan, if things had gone my way. Because, look, I've always said to people, if I would advise somebody today is to be a diplomat at a young age before you have kids and family.
Yes.
And then at a later age when your kids are out of the house, when you don't have to look after the little ones.
Yes.
It destabilizes families. Some people think it benefits families, but it destabilizes them. Because you move in between countries, change schools. You know, my daughter, the elder one, Chidi, had to lose some year of school because of my moves.
Ah, yes.
In between countries.
Mm.
So he will come back to South Africa in the middle of the year. So he loses those 6 months. But with homeschooling and other things these days, I think they can do it well. But
absolutely.
I would rather do it when I'm old and settled and I don't have to be dragging kids along.
Mm. Let's start with, I guess, former U.S. ambassador, or ambassador to the U.S., Ntate Ibrahim Rasool.
Yes, sir.
He's back.
Yes.
And despite the fact that President Ramaphosa had asked that, can it be as low-key as possible, he arrived to a hero's welcome at Cape Town International Airport. What are your thoughts on, one, his welcome committee, two, the speech he made, and three, should have even said anything?
Well, I don't know, Trevor, is it me? Maybe I need headphones. Tato is speaking so soft today. I'm struggling to hear you. is it okay? But that's fine.
Yeah.
I don't know why did Ambassador Rasool elect to go and speak publicly about this whole thing. In defiance of the president orders. Because for me, it's defiance. But again, if there's a committee of people or fans or supporters who are, for example, deciding to give you a welcome hero, it is beyond your control and it's beyond the control of the president of the republic. You can't tell people that they must not go and welcome one of their own or their favorite. That's one element. If I was in a position of Ambassador Rasool, especially looking at the circumstances between South Africa and the United States of America. Yes, I would have thanked the people for being there to welcome me, but I would have limited my speech or put it in such a way that I need to first go and brief my principals, meaning the Minister of International Relations and Cooperation, Minister Lamola, as well as President Ramaphosa, being the envoy of President Ramaphosa, being the person who has sent you to the United States. Then you will address the rallies after, or the public and what, but brief the principals first, because this could have been contained. And it look, Tato, it is unprecedented that an ambassador comes back home and there's rallies. Look, I can't recall a situation where, and I know it has happened, but I can't recall exactly who from which country in South Africa where a person was sent out and declared persona non grata at the level of ambassador. I specifically know of an ex-colleague who was at Munich in Germany. You know, he's departed now. That was sent back by the Germans, but he was a very junior person, not at ambassador's level. Now, coming to the content of the speech of Ambassador Rasool, it was unnecessary. It was uncalled for. I spoke to over 20 former and current diplomats regarding this matter. We created a group and we had a number of discussions. And everybody was shocked, even those who agree with him, those who support him, but people were shocked at the manner he handled this whole thing. And what he said there, you know, thanking people and saying we should not be bullied and I'm being chased out of the U.S. It's okay. Those are standard things that are in the media space that he could have commented on. But to go to the details and the content and continued the utterances towards Donald Trump administration at that level, being an ambassador, I have a problem with that. And I don't think he should have done that. Pardon me. But there's also another element, Tato, that I've observed with this anti-America sentiments. You see, when you are posted to a diplomatic mission of a country, it's a bilateral arrangement. Now to go and put the issues of Palestine at a bilateral engagement with the U.S., in a negative format. If we believe and we know and we think Israel continues to bomb Palestine, to destroy and occupy Palestine while supported by the Americans, you understand? There's a way of engaging that one could have engaged the Americans. You know, the way Americans are being engaged or the way America is engaging Russia with regard to Ukraine. Instead of insulting them, instead of calling them names, use your bilateral relations position as an ambassador to can say, America, can we talk? Your continued support of Israel, it's understood you've got your own relations with them, but with your arms and ammunition and jets and bombs, they are destroying the lives of Palestinians. Can we talk about it? So you are persuading the Americans and showing them the light that their double standard is not working.
Sure.
But going to sit in Trump's land and you insult Trump, I have a problem with that. And I think his speeches or after the return has worsened the situation. I think personally where I'm sitting, it has just worsened the situation, especially that his welcome rally, you know, I called it a political party rally in a diplomatic mission, because that's what actually happened. You know, you are returning home, you still have to debrief your principals, and you go into a rally and you make rhetoric statements. That was uncalled for, but in a normal country, under normal circumstances, Ambassador Rasool would have been facing music from his principals, because now people are asking, you know, important questions, Tato, that is Ambassador Rasool's utterances, and I call them utterances, the position of the South African government. You understand? Because he was talking as a South African envoy to the USA. Does that represent the South African? We should be, as diplomats, you must have the ability to manage, control your emotions as well as your personal views vis-a-vis the views and the position of the country. And he lacked that. That's why last week I said to you, when people said Ambassador Rasool is a seasoned, experienced diplomat, I questioned what experience, what level of experience. And it has come out clear. You know, we were talking here last week on Saturday. On Sunday, he did exactly what I was afraid he will do.
But is it a case of he doesn't get it, or he's intentionally saying, if I die, I die, but this is, you know, I'm going to die on the mountain with what I feel about this?
Look, I don't think it's not that he doesn't get it. I think there's a sheer level of arrogance.
Okay.
And I don't care, you understand? I don't know what is the intention with this whole thing. What is he trying to achieve about this whole thing? But I don't think it is, you know, as they say in Africa, it's very better and improving. And sure, making things better for us and the Americans, and even for the Americans with the Palestinians. I don't think it's you know, helping the situation. And we all have very strong feelings and positions we have taken about the destruction of Palestine and the lives of Palestine. We all have that. I think every normal human being doesn't want what is happening to the Palestinian children. You understand? Sure. But it's how we approach it, and how, especially when it comes to, you know, diplomatic, you know, fields and studies. I don't think Ambassador Rasool handled this diplomatically. But again, as I said last week, which country is going, which president of South Africa is going to send him out again as an ambassador? And which country is going to accept him? You understand? I wonder if the situation, maybe we should actually send Ambassador Rasool to Israel and see how he will cope there. Because those are the people he's supposed to be challenging.
In fact, speaking of that, America have announced their candidate for ambassador to South Africa.
Yes.
You know, speaking of maybe we must send Ambassador Rasool to Israel. And Leo Brent Bozzle III.
Yes.
He's a conservative activist and author, media commentator in the U.S., and he's the founder of the Media Research Center, a conservative watchdog group that critiques perceived liberal bias in mainstream media. He is probably as redneck and racist as he looks. He looks as a redneck as folk. Looks like he could drag you at the back of a bucky.
Yeah.
And he's pro-Israel. Do you think this is a middle finger
from the
U.S. that we're going to send you someone who is pro-Israel and probably doesn't like black people?
Yeah. Yes. Look, Tato, he's actually, I've learned, and I don't know how true that is,
yeah,
that he actually has a dual citizenship, first of all, Israel and the U.S.
Well, on his social media, he's got the U.S. flag and the Israeli flag. So.
Yeah. So apparently he's got dual citizenship. However, that's immaterial. His citizenship is the determination of the U.S.
In fact, I think back in 2011, he was on Fox News, mm-hmm. and they were talking about Obama at the time, and he described Obama as a skinny ghetto crackhead.
Yes, yes, I remember that.
During an interview on Fox News in 2011.
I've known.
So that's the level of person we are possibly going to have to deal with.
Yeah, look, I've known him as a media commentator mostly.
Yeah.
I never imagined him being a diplomat or an ambassador. Well, you don't take people of that caliber and who talk like that to be ambassador. But maybe, a better one. Maybe he will know where to draw the line when he comes here. Look, it is in him. He's a very racist person.
Mm.
He is pro, you know, Israel. And in the middle of the same reason that Rasool was chucked out of the USA, you sent the exact opposite of Rasool to South Africa. And, you know, you can say a Donald Trump administration is showing the Ramaphosa administration a middle finger that that's the medicine you deserve. I'll show you how far I can go with this whole thing. Look, we were worried about Pollack, who was said to be one of the candidates that we are going to come. He is as bad, you know, Pollack as we can imagine. Now they gave us the worst person, a very racist person. And in the middle of AfriForum and the Democratic Alliance and others like Solidaritate engage them. You know, it shouldn't come as a surprise, Tato, that these people who have been living in South Africa under the ban of the old apartheid regime to go to the U.S. may have actually even made comments. Because it does. When you lobby, I told you last week how Ambassador Rasool became an ambassador to the U.S. under Barack Obama.
Ah, yes.
And it was Obama who actually said, that man who treated me like this when I was there, who took care of me, I like his thinking, send him to, I don't mind having him under my administration as the ambassador. And we jumped, we did that. So the Solidarity and AfriForum and the DA may have contributed. Look, they are not ashamed that they are behind Israel.
Sure.
They are not ashamed that they are racists. You understand? They are not ashamed that they believe in white supremacy. And they may have said to the Americans when they've been going there in and out, we wouldn't mind to have somebody like this as an ambassador. But it is up to us whether we accept him as an ambassador or not. By the way, you don't bring your credentials when you are already in the country. The U.S. has to inform us through a note verbal.
In the history of diplomacy, according to your recollection, has a country ever said no thanks to credentials of a proposed ambassador?
Yes, it has happened quite a lot, Tato, even with South Africa. The said one was in South Africa It happened to my friend, Robert McBride.
Oh, yes, I remember.
You remember that he was supposed to be the South African ambassador to Switzerland. But it was not the Swiss that rejected him primarily. There was a lobby groups, you know, NGOs, the Democratic Party at that time, and the New National Party, and a lot of other lobby groups. They lobbied and they actually managed to tell the Swiss that you are not going to accept that. And Foreign Affairs at that time, which is Derek or today, or the president banned, you know, and to the music. And then Robert McBride became our ambassador to Switzerland. And it was all based on his activities as a guerrilla, as a freedom fighter, which some of us, and I still believe that we should have not done that. If all of us are going to be told we can't be ambassadors because at some stage you were wielding AK-47s or Scorpion machine guns, and therefore we were fighting for the liberation of the country.
Exactly.
And I think we were unfair towards Mr. McBride at the time. As a nation, we failed to rise and defend. But I know it has happened in many countries where they reject people. Or they send people back, they declare them persona non grata. Or the countries stand up and say, we are not comfortable with that candidate coming to our country. Without, you know, remembering the names or the countries, but it has happened quite a lot. Look, do you want to ask me if South Africa should do that or can do that? In this instance, never. No. I don't think President Ramaphosa is in any position at a moment to can tell Trump we don't want that person. Because we must also check what has he said and done in the past about South Africa or South African leaders. We can't do it. It will be unfair and unjust to do it because of his political beliefs and association to Israel.
Yes.
Understand his racist utterances. I mean, how many more racist people do we deal with? Donald Trump himself is a racist person or he's a white supremacist. So are we saying we are not going to engage and deal with those people because they see themselves as superior to black people? It doesn't work like that in diplomacy. I still have to go and check and find if this man, Bozell the Third, has said or done anything, you know, towards South Africa that is very negative that we can stand up and say, but this man hates South Africa or he has said negative things about South African leaders, therefore we don't want him. But I don't think we even if that exists, we are on a back foot. I think if we want to treat, we must treat him very carefully and diplomatically at the moment. And I'm glad the Americans announced their candidate before us. I'll tell you why. Last week when I said South Africa must take a step back, hold on a little bit, let this thing cool off, and let's identify the right person. I disagree with people who are saying a white person must be sent there. That's the only thing I agree with Rasool on. It must not be color-based. It should not be color-based. We should not be twisted and put in a corner.
Okay.
By pressure, because America has never said to us they don't want a black person or a person of color. They've never said that. We should, and a lot of, you know, names are coming to mind. I'm thinking in terms of crisis like this. I missed, for the last few days, I missed the late chief of protocol, Ntate Billy Modise. This is the time you need a gentle giant of diplomacy like him. You know, may he still rest in peace.
Yeah.
But again, there's another Billy Masetla, former ambassador Billy Masetla. He's also late. You understand? The kind of caliber of people that I think, I don't know where is more shaky these days. He was in Canada recently. I don't know if he's still there. But imagine if we take more shaykh and respond to the Americans and send more shaykh. Look, he's a very seasoned ambassador. He was in Algeria. He was in Canada, or he's still in Canada. I don't know if he's back. And imagine if we wake up and we say, in response of Bozell the Third, we'll send more shaykh to the US. I wonder what Trump is going to do. But Ambassador Moshaikh is a very seasoned diplomat. And I think South Africa has quite a number of people, especially in the diplomatic field. There's a gentleman who used to be our consul general in Chicago, in Los Angeles, actually, Mr. Cyril Ndaba. He's a career diplomat. He's out of the system now. He's actually the gentleman who took over for me in Kigali in Rwanda. I was thinking of him. You know, he's a very seasoned career diplomat. So there's quite a number of people that I think President Ramaphosa can look into. Instead of being influenced to say we want to send a white person to the US. If I was in President Ramaphosa's position, I would actually not send a white person. Because then we what are we saying if we do that? Are we saying white is supremacy, is good to lead us as a nation? That's we'll be responding to Trump's, you know, rhetorics as well.
But is there any wrong in understanding that maybe we need to play this game in a certain way? So without necessarily compromising our positions globally or when it comes to policy, foreign policy, sometimes you still need to play the game according to the rules of who you're on the field with.
Yes, yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Because you're still trying to build here. You know, unlike other nations that might be deciding that we're going to go it on our own. If you give us a tariff, we're going to revenge. If you do this, we're going to revenge. We are still we're willing to talk when you're ready.
Yeah, yeah.
And remember I said to you the other day that, but to what end?
To what end?
At what stage do we say, actually it's fine. You know where to find us when you're ready to talk. We will leave the door open and then carry on. Because at the rate things are happening, Botsang, looking at the sequence of events, there's no way AGOA will be renewed. There's no way.
No.
AGOA is going to be the final Trump card, pardon the pun, that they're going to play.
Yes.
AGOA is going to be that final nail in the coffin. And hence I was saying to you, at what stage do we say, AGOA is going, guys. Let's get ready. Or how do we mitigate against the job losses that will come with AGOA?
Mm-hmm.
How do we find other markets? How do we cultivate the current markets that we have?
Look, it's a race against time. It's all about time at the moment.
Mm.
We are the losers in this battle, with the diplomatic battle with the US. We are going to be the losers at the end. But as you said, unfortunately, time is against us.
Yeah.
But a good planning nation would have seen Donald Trump's rhetorics towards his election campaign and started preparing for this. The fact that we failed, or we never thought he would really do it, but me and you, we spoke about it several times during the election campaign, that this man is coming, is going to do this whole thing. So intelligence forces, diplomatic forces, and politicians of the country should have come with a backup plan. And backup could have been also, are we going to put more funds in areas that will be affected by the withdrawal of AGOA? Are we going to look for alternative markets? Because the markets are there, guys. We should not think America is the second trading partner of South Africa. At some stage, they were the number one trading partner. China has overtaken them. We should look at other markets, the Arab, you know, markets. We should look at the Asian markets.
Mm.
You know, we should also even look at the African markets.
Sure.
You understand? Because Africa is growing bigger and bigger, and these whole things that we've been sending to America. Africa may be the market itself, but it's about time, Tato.
Mm.
It's time. At a moment, it should not be about race. It should be about somebody with a level-headed, you know, a level-headed person who can go to the U.S. and represent us. I've heard suggestion that President Ramaphosa must assemble a team of effect-finding mission, you know, like, you know, firefighters who can go and fight the fire now. We know in the past years he used a person like his former security advisor, Mr. Sydney Mufumadi, to can attend to some of matters like this. Do I support? I don't think that will work.
Mm.
Find people in the diplomatic cycles. Find people in the business cycle as well, because you can send business people as ambassadors. You understand? You know, and who are seasoned, who are well vested in international trade and international affairs, to can go and they can even assemble a team, but it should be a full diplomatic posting for those people.
Yes.
Let them go there and do the work
and
rebuild or rekindle the relationships with the US. You know what is the other thing that I was thinking? Have you seen how countries use the third country these days to can bring peace between, like you see Qatar has done with Rwanda and that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Trump has done a Trump between the war between you, Putin and Zelensky. You understand? The third person. It will also not harm us as a nation to can approach a third country that is Trump friendly and say, brothers or sisters, can you intervene? Can you go and intervene and talk so that we can, first we must reduce the fire, you understand? We must reduce the fire and let the pot be just simmering on a normal state, then start engaging diplomatically. I think we must use the next 2 months, before we send a full ambassador to the U.S., and we must see if President Ramaphosa is going to... You know, Trump is moving very fast. He fires Rasool in 1 week. He sends us a very radical person. So, yeah, Tato, that's my view and opinion regarding this whole matter.
Does it help that the new ambassador, Bozil III, could be walking into a country that has the embassy on the Laila Khalid Drive?
Well, is there a consulate in Sandton? But look, Americans said they will shut down their office if we rename that street. I have heard that President Ramaphosa has approached the city of Johannesburg regarding specifically that matter this past week.
Yeah, there are discussions this past week.
You see, Tato, I have a problem with that. Yes, Mr. Ramaphosa is being diplomatic, is trying to extinguish fires. That may be. Fires may start. Before this becomes fire, can we leave that?
Yeah.
I have a problem with the President of the Republic interfering. We have 3 tiers of government. There's a national government, there's a provincial, and there's a local government. You know, people are saying, yeah, but why should we continue to put more fire in the war regarding Leila Khalid? When was this decision taken? What informed it? Do South Africans or people living around that area have a problem with it? Were there public consultations, the normal processes? It should be our problem, not the American problems.
But also with respect, though, do the people generally know who she is? Do they understand the role she played? So, for instance, versus if we looked at liberation heroes from the continent alone,
yes,
whom we might not have streets named after yet.
Yeah.
Would a Leila Khalid jump in the queue straight to Sandton make sense? Or is it generally vele, we want to poke the eagle in the eye?
Look, like I said, it depends when was this decision taken. Was it before this drama with the Americans? Or was it now? If it's now, if this decision was taken now, it will be poking the eagle in the eye. It will actually be, you understand? And I'm not a person who gets excited in renaming streets and what against heroes, because they don't add value. To me, it's recognizing people by street names. How many streets are named after Sobukwe? You know, for me, it's neither here nor there. But if it will worsen the situation and we think it will have a direct impact, if it was me, a man on the street, I will rename it and see where the Americans will move their consulate to. Understand? But this is we know that the Americans are against the Palestinians all over the world or anything there. They even have an attitude towards the Islamic groups or movements.
Even with visa renewals now, especially I think for students, they now look at your history. If you're pro-Palestinian, your visa might be revoked.
Yes, they've actually announced.
Yes, and then also for people coming into the U.S., they have every right to look into your phone. They can do like a shallow search to see generally what's on your phone. They can do a deep search. Obviously, the deep search is only allowed if there is genuine suspicion that you are a non-desirable person.
Yes.
But the fact that even at the airport now, they can check your phone.
Yeah.
And I'm told that for American citizens, you can refuse, but they'll let you into the country because you're home.
You're home, yes.
But if you are a visitor and they say they want to check your phone and you refuse, you must go back home.
Yeah, look.
It's getting to that stage now.
It is. He signed a decree in that regard.
And I was thinking the other day, because I am pro-Palestine, and because the disinformation is, if you're pro-Palestine, you're pro-Hamas, therefore you are a bad person. It suits the narrative that if Botsang says free Palestine, therefore Botsang is pro-Hamas.
Yeah.
And I'm unapologetic about feeling that what has happened to the people of Palestine is unjust, and that the United Nations have been toothless in that regard. The G8 have been toothless in that regard. Nothing has changed. There's a double standard that other nations are told about the sovereignty of certain people, but the Palestinians, because they're brown people, they must... For me, that's a massive problem. So I've got a U.S. visa, and I'm supposed to visit my sister next year. But if my position on Palestine means I can't go to the US anymore. I don't want to go to the US anymore. It's fine. But I'm not going to delete anything I've posted about Palestine because I'm afraid I might not be allowed back in there.
In the country, yeah. Look, they've got the right to accept who comes into their country, like any other country.
Absolutely.
Does. You understand? And I think the world will get to a point, Tato. I think the world will get to a point where people are saying, you know what, I don't care, I don't have to go there.
Mm.
And or we don't want to deal with them, we don't want to trade with them. Yes, there'll be suffering, yes, there'll be losses. Some people like you, I mean, your business, the nature of your business, you play all over the world. You may be invited, and you will lose out on that business if they arrive at that stage.
I'm supposed to go to Miami end of April
for
a gig. And we'll see what happens, if they let me in or not.
My brother, you know what? The opposition is very clear, and you are not a terrorist, and you don't support terrorist organization. But if the Americans want to think that way, that when a person is pro-Palestine, therefore is pro-Hamas, look, for them, I told you the last time that they even closed the Palestinian mission there. Because they don't recognize the Palestinian Liberation Organization or the leadership of Palestine. They don't see them as a sovereign state. And we have a problem with that, you know? This thing of Palestine, it has made me to even sit down and think, how did we become the face of the Palestinian battle? I know you answered me last week to say because nobody was doing anything about it and more lives were dying. But this behavior of Ambassador Rasool in ripping this up and the Americans in response to Israel and Palestine, you know, Tato, I'm starting to have a suspicion that there are other people at the back who are role players in this whole thing. That for South Africa to be the face of the Palestinian legal battle.
Sure.
It may not be the South African government. The conduct of Ibrahim Rasool tells me there may be some Islamist movements and fundamentalists who are backing this conduct or behavior. The same way as there are groups in South Africa who are pushing the South African government to support and to lead and become the face of defending Palestine, a war, you know, on behalf of Palestine. I don't think it's a South African government position because we have been having a position since the 90s up to now. But I think there are forces that are rising. Look, America is suspecting that, you know, Iran is funding this whole project. There's, pardon me, suspicions that there are Islamist group or countries that are funding this activism for Palestine. But again, what is wrong with that? In NGOs funding, you know, or other NGOs organizations in South Africa to do that. My question becomes, why South Africa? Why these countries when the Arab League, the neighbors of Palestine, and many other countries that I know they are pro-Palestine, why are they not taking this up? Saudi Arabia, Iran, Iraq, and others. Why South Africa is being the face? I think we must start as a nation. We must take a little bit off the pedal and reflect on our international engagements as well as relations. I think we must take the foot off the pedal, again revisit the foreign policy. What is our foreign policy saying? And we must march along those lines.
Because you can still have a principled position on an issue without necessarily wanting to be, we're going to be the champions of this issue.
Exactly.
Because that comes with the consequences that we're now going to have to deal with.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with dealing with those consequences. But we must have the courage of our convictions then.
Yeah.
Because to have this position, but you still want to go beg for talk to us.
When we have taken
when you take that position, you take the position understanding that these ones here might not talk to us.
Exactly.
And you proceed assuming that the worst is going to happen. So let's prepare for the worst.
Yeah.
And shout out to Namibia. Namibia on Wednesday announced that with immediate effect, all American visitors to the U.S. must now apply for a visa
to Namibia. Yes, yeah. They don't play marbles. You see, those are principled positions.
Yeah.
Those are the positions we can implement. We can wake up and say, all Americans coming to South Africa, they need visas.
Yeah.
You understand? And it is in line. We change our policy. We are not attacking them. We are not fighting. We are not using the Palestinian baiting to fight our own battles. And we focus on our own, because South Africans need visas to the US.
Anyway.
So we can say it's a reciprocity.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
In fact, just while we're at it, I mean, I know we don't have it on our list of things to talk about. Why did it take so long for President Ndaitwa to be inaugurated?
I don't know. I think it was because of the passing of
Nujoma.
I don't know. It was too long, but I think it was
because she won the election last year.
Yeah,
and the inauguration is only now.
Yeah, but a month ago, President Nujoma passed away.
Yeah.
I think that could be the reason.
But even before that, the same Nujoma passed away. She should have been inaugurated by then, surely.
No, that way it depends. But look at the Americans. It's the same thing. It depends on the policy of the country. Maybe the elections happened, but the other president was supposed to finish their term. Remember, with us, it's different. We always recall presidents.
Oh, yes.
You understand? That's how everything is. The last 3 months, you don't finish them, we recall you.
Before your family can even pack the bedroom and the
exactly.
your cutlery yeah. that your grandmother gave you as an heirloom.
Yeah, maybe it's a transition, maybe it's their policy.
Also handover, maybe.
It's a handing over. The term must come to an actual end. Yes, elections happened. Normally, like in South Africa, elections would happen 3 months, at least 3 months before.
Yeah.
It must be 3 months and backwards before. Sure. So that 3 months, the incumbent must finish their job and handing over. That could be the reason.
Yeah, but shout out to Namibia for taking a position. But even in Europe, I mean, the EU could sit and bitch and moan about Trump. But instead, they're deciding that, okay, so clearly we're on our own. Clearly, his vice president and the military?
Secretary of Defense.
They feel that, now we are leeches on them. So, I mean, Germany, for the first time since World War II, are re-looking at maybe we need to rearm ourselves.
Yeah, actually, they're spending more.
That's what I'm saying. But that's what I'm saying, that we can sit here and beg America to speak to us, or we can look at what other nations are doing. They are keeping it moving.
Yeah, they're moving.
So how do we support our farmers that might lose access to the U.S. market? How do we support them or find new markets for them? We keep it moving.
Exactly.
Instead of begging, would you please speak to me?
By the way, while you are congratulating Namibia, we must also congratulate them. It's the only African state that has females as the president and the vice president. It's the only state in the continent. It's the first time it's happening. So they call them, you know, Namibia is called the land of the brave.
Oh, yes.
And they are living to that name.
Absolutely. Let's go to, in fact, let's cross from the west to the east. Let's go to Mozambique. Leaders are in peace talks. What's going on there?
Look, that's not much that came out of that. But look, it's a positive. I remember since the disputed elections last year, there's been, you know, over 300 people were killed. And I've learned that the majority of the people who were killed, they were killed by police bullets.
Yes.
You know, the official report has come out. And I think the president of Mozambique, Mr. President Daniel Chapo,
yes.
After visiting South Africa, because he visited President Ramaphosa 2-3 weeks ago, and I think, you know, South Africans are known to be peacemakers and peace lovers, and they talk of engagement. He then decided to extend an olive branch and invite Valencio Mondlane. For engagement. You know, they met for the very first time. Those two leaders who said they will never even shake hands, they will never talk to each other. They met, and the outcome is that it has been very positive and the steps moving forward.
I was in Mozambique last month. And because I'm a political animal, I always ask about politics to just people that I meet if we're talking. And I was asking people what they thought about the fact that Mondlane is back in the country. And is he not worried that, because, I mean, he's already alluded to the fact that they tried to take him out.
Out, yeah.
And I was asking them that, you know, is he safe? And they said that he came back intentionally, deliberately, because he knows that if anything happens to him, there'll be one finger pointing in one direction.
In one direction.
And that they can't afford for anything to happen to him.
Look, it's reverse psychology, and it's an art of war. That's what you do. If people want to take you out or to even jail you, which wasn't the situation in Mozambique, you put it to them. You take it to them. It's a pushback. I'm here. Kill me or arrest me. Instead, him coming back, him being in the country, has led them into the boardroom. Which I've always advocated for peace between African leaders, you know, because innocent people are dying outside. I just hope and pray that this is not a compromise situation whereby he'll be given a ministerial or a diplomatic post.
Or prime minister.
And then he neglects or ignores the people that he had rallied. You understand?
They died for him.
Well, exactly. But you see, again, Tato, the other challenge is with democracy. People were saying these elections were not free and fair. International organizations were saying that. SADC was saying the same. Mozambicans themselves were saying this was not free and fair elections and Frelimo has robbed. And now that one person, a leader of one of the opposition in the name of Mr. Mondlane, goes and engage after people have lost lives, goes and engage, does it now mean...
Is he betraying the revolution?
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Or also, does it also mean the elections are now accepted? The results and the outcome, it's okay, we have accepted. That's what keeps political parties and leaders so long in power in African continent. Because even if they mess up, and even people complain and protest and say, you have messed up, they then go to the negotiating table after, and they dangle a carrot or a piece of cheese in front of the opposition, and everything subsides. And I have a problem with that's where democracy is failing the people, because the people are not getting the benefit of that democracy or the democratic process of elections. Mm. I mean, if elections have been officially declared unfair, why wouldn't Frelimo or President Daniel Chapo and the other leaders of that country call for re-elections or recounting, whatever would have brought peace? Now you are putting what you call it, a plaster on top of the wound, because the Mozambicans are going to live with this wound until the next elections.
I was going to say, I mean, if you've cried foul and then people have died in the name of getting justice for you,
yes,
and for themselves, what is your negotiation position that will also benefit them?
Them, yeah. That
because if you can negotiate at a level that everyone wins, including your electorate, including those that died for you, then maybe it makes sense.
Yes. Yes, primarily for peace. Let there be peace in the county and police stop killing people.
Sure.
Secondly, to say, but there was an unjust practice of the elections. How do we address that? Because that should be there peacefully.
Because for me, that's what's most important here.
Yeah, and not positions.
That don't sweep what has happened already under the carpet.
Exactly.
Let's. How do we acknowledge what has happened? And how do we make sure it never, ever happens again? And how do we make sure that the people that took to the street, risking life, limb, and livelihoods, understand
that's why we're having these talks? In the next few weeks, with these negotiations and engagement going, we must observe what is at the table. What is Mondlane going to walk away with on behalf of the Mozambican people?
I'm happy they're talking, though.
It's good. It's a step in the right direction.
Because whatever the compromise is, as long as it's in the interest of the people, and it's not in the interest of how do we both benefit.
Yes.
It's more how do the people benefit. Then we're all winning.
Exactly.
We're all winning. ANC lobbying EFF and other parties for budget vote support. Is this an admission that the DA are not going to come to this party?
Yes. This party of... and again, exactly what you just said. The ANC swallowed their pride. Their chief whip, Ntuli.
Yes.
Is, you know, engaging other parties in parliament to say, can we talk in case the Democratic Alliance doesn't vote again? But how ironic, how bizarre, actually, Tato, that the same ANC that claimed that they understand the demise of VET and the black people, they want to go and lobby the EFF that has said in red they will not support an increase of VET. And they want to go and lobby the EFF. Again, it's the same as the Mondlane and Mozambique thing. Is the EFF going to put the interest of the people and the masses they represent up front to say, we are putting our foot down, you're not increasing VET? The DA has stepped a little bit backwards. They are not talking about VET specifically. They are talking about other things that they are making demands of in the budget, which I think it is disingenuous of the DA. The DA is no longer the opposition party. They are part of the government today.
Yes.
So it is disingenuous that they want to actually put some of their policy positions using the budget vote. sure. as a backdoor. That's what they are doing. Look, it's a political party. They are playing politics. They can do that.
I was going to say, I mean, everyone has a bargaining...
But is this ingenious? Why do you shovel things behind the back door and to using the budget vote? I want to see if the EFF will vote with the ANC on this budget vote. And again, the controversy is your party is bigger than the EFF, is the official opposition, but they are not being approached. You understand? They approach the EFF and other small parties. Look, ANC, if they can get the EFF vote, and it's becoming clear that this is not the government budget. Remember when we discussed it, it is the ANC budget. And the DA is right that this is the ANC budget. That's why it is the ANC that is running around and lobbying. Look, I think it will go through. Why do they...
Without the DA?
Without the DA. Okay. It will, because if the EFF... Look, ANC has 40% of MPs in there. If you add Patriotic Alliance and Inkatha Freedom Party, you know... And then you go and you add one of the small parties there. The PAC, the EFF, the PAC is in the GNU. They said they will not support this, just like the DA. I know definitely that Patriotic Alliance will support. Gaitin has softened up towards President Ramaphosa. He believes that the GNU is the best thing that has happened for this country. And I think the Patriotic Alliance, with their percentage, Inkatha Freedom Party, and we don't know, maybe the Good Party and others, they will support. About that. I mean, we're not fighting for a mere 1% here. There's bigger things in that budget. There's more into the VAT increase than a mere 1% that we are looking at. And if they agree to it now, remember, it is actually 2%. They are just moving the other 1% to the next financial year. They approve it now, so it is 2%. The next financial year starts 1st of April next year.
No, it's half-half.
Yes.
It? So it's one?
No. It's one now and one in future. That's my understanding.
No, the 0.5.
It's 0.5 now and 0.5 in future.
It's 0.5 now, 0.5, I think.
In next financial year, 1st of April.
And then if things improve, I think it's based on if things improve,
yes,
we won't...
At the other 0.5.
Yes.
Well, they promised that when President Ramaphosa took over in 2018, didn't they promise that when VAT moved from 14 to 15%, if things improve, we will leave it there.
Did they improve?
Well, they got worse. And they didn't, things are worse. The government needs 59 billion. You understand? But it didn't get worse because the economy performed bad. It's because of maladministration, misuse of state resources, and corruption. Things got worse because of that, you know, overspending, reckless spending, and unnecessary, you know, increasing the size of the cabinet, and things like that. And I listened the other day to the ANC Secretary General lying through his teeth, you know, Mr. Fikile Mbalula, saying the government had cut the costs of what MPs and ministers, that they are driving a car between 500,000 and 800,000. Where? You know that irritates me when politicians lie through their teeth. And Fikile Mbalula was lying. Where do you buy an X5 for between 500,000 and 800,000? Where? They must tell us. I'll go and buy. They will donate one for the ministers.
On Malibong, where it's second hand. It has about 100,000 on the dial.
And do they buy second hand?
Exactly.
You understand? I mean, even a standard BMW 3 Series or Mercedes-Benz C-Class is not 500,000.
In fact, what's happening right now is a lot of entry-level models now are between 300,000 and 500,000.
Yes.
Just entry-level cars.
Yes. Polo.
It's wild. It's wild.
Understand? You buy a Polo, entry-level Polo, like 400,000, and Fikile goes in front of the television and says, yeah, they took our credit cards. Yes, but because they were misusing them, that didn't save us money. Credit cards was for convenience. But because they were misusing them, they still have that benefit, that money. The problem in South Africa is that ministerial handbook.
Sure.
That ministerial handbook is a serious problem.
And I like how often they will hide behind the ministerial handbook as if nothing can be done to adjust the ministerial handbook.
The problem is, it is the ministers. It is them.
The ones eating from it.
The ones eating from the ministerial handbook.
That we're expecting to fix it.
Now we're expecting them to change it. That's where the problem is. If this was a policy of, for example, the Public Service Commission, understand? It would be a different story because professionals are sitting there determining. But it is them. It is the MPs who must vote. you know, for this building. And every MP aspires to be a minister or a deputy minister in future. So they're not going to go and change the ministerial handbook. I mean, you know, basic things, Tato. Why drive a car over R1 million? Why don't they drive their cars to work and then claim for kilometers like we do? Understand? You are Tato, you are driving yourself every day to the studio, to your gigs. The next thing you wake up, you become a deputy minister. You've got 2 bodyguards in Cape Town, 2 bodyguards in Gauteng. You've got blue lights. And all those, why? Why do they need that? If we voted for you, we have put you there. What are you afraid of?
Why are you so scared of your own people?
Yes. Why are you afraid of?
Yeah.
And that's a challenge. That's where the money is going. We are, people can say it's little money that goes to ministers. There's nothing called little money. And I've challenged people. You have mentioned it for the third time here, that we spend 44 million rands on each minister per annum. Taking everything into consideration. I'm not talking salaries. Nobody has ever challenged me on that because it's the truth. The car, Cape Town, the house. Yes, I've heard some when you lived in Cape Town and you are a minister, you still stay in your house in Cape Town, but you must be provided a house in Gauteng. And then if you don't, the maintenance. If you live in your own house, there's still an upgrade of security where a fire pool becomes a swimming pool or vice versa. You know, it's things like that that creates a problem for us as a nation. That the elitists, the people who are supposed to be vanguards of the funds and the resources of this country, are the ones who are stealing them, who are eating out of that pot.
In fact, 3 years ago, I think it was during lockdown, there's a minister who sent my girlfriend at the time massive bouquet of flowers. I wonder whose money was used for that. What if my own money was used to shell out my girl? Imagine.
Your taxes, my bro. Your taxes.
Yes,
he used to send flowers.
And imagine.
That you can't afford or that you never sent yourself. We must go and check who at whose money were those flowers bought.
Maybe I should squinch and send his wife flowers. What do you think?
No. Don't reduce yourself.
Don't be petty.
That level.
Don't be petty.
Yes.
Although Patti LaBelle is one of my favorite singers. Let's move to the Gauteng judge president and the directive he gave to the courts regarding mediation.
Very, very interesting directive that came from Justin Mlambo.
Yeah.
The judge president of Gauteng. Look, sadly, this does not include labor criminal matters. Sadly for me. But the labor matters already have, let me start there. Labor already has the CCMA, you know, which is actually the conciliation, the Commission for Conciliation, Mediation and Arbitration.
Yes.
Now, what Justice Mlambo is proposing, because of the backlog, Tato, the backlog, it's the role, the court role, it's 7 years behind. For example, if you go and you enroll a matter today on a civil matter, you are only talking about civil matters, you'll get the date of 2031.
Yeah.
2031, that's where we are as a nation. And I don't know why are they reacting only now, because once there's a backlog of 2 years, the country, you know, did well with labor. They introduced the CCMA, which I don't think it helped the situation. The CCMA, it's a mess on its own. But it alleviated the situation because the backlog of a court role at the labor court is 2 years because of the mediation and arbitration that is done by the CCMA. Mm. That's one element. But with the civil matters, and civil matter, for example, divorces and issues that Justice Mlambo says, it was scary, actually. I saw one of his interviews during the week in response to that. He says 85% of matters that are on court roll, the court is you know, embedded with these whole things, 85% of them, they get settled on the morning of the hearing.
Imagine.
So people go and take matters to court. They don't want to mediate. They don't want to engage. They don't want to settle out of court. And on the day of the hearing, they reach an agreement outside. Then they sign a paper and they go to the judge and say, we want this matter to be removed from the roll. We have reached an agreement after waiting for 5, 6, 7 years.
When someone else could have actually had that slot.
That space. But you know why is this happening? People are eating. It's the law firms.
Ah.
You understand? The longer a matter takes, my first divorce case took 4 years. 4 years. And we settled. The same thing happened a week before that we settled. I actually didn't even go to court. My lawyer said, you don't have to come. We are just going to present your settlement agreement. After 4 years, we settled. It's lawyers. Remember, lawyers are business people. They must eat. You understand? They drag you. And people are suffering during that time. People go into depression. People lose money. People get bankrupt because money goes to law firms. One of the questions that was posed to Justice Mlambo was, but at whose expense? Who's going to foot the bill for this mediation? It is obviously the litigants, the parties. Sure. You understand? It is the litigants that are going to... Because if me and you, we are in a dispute, for example, for a property, it's me and you who are going to be paying lawyers to mediate and to engage and to reach a settlement. And the longer we don't agree, the longer we take, the more the lawyers benefit. And for me, that's the only challenge, that it is going to, yes, alleviate the burden from the state, from the justice, because it is underfunded. And the challenge is they don't have judges. They don't have personnel. Understand? The courts, I mean, if you go to the labor court and you see the files there, it's a complete mess. If you go to the high court here in town, the Joburg High Court or the Pretoria High Court, you look at the files and the cases in backlog, it's a mess. And they are trying to alleviate that situation. But again, it begs me to question politics. Why would a state not fund the justice process, you know, the judiciary? Why are we having less judges when you have qualified people acting as judges? Why is the state not putting resources? And resources in this instance is money, because personnel is there. They just need to hire people. And the Judicial Service Commission report, if you look at the Judicial Commission Service report on how to improve the laws of the country, how to improve the service, not the laws, it talks about we lack judges, we lack more magistrates, we lack more of court personnel that will aid the situation. And you ask yourself, why would Godongwana, the Minister of Finance, when they do this budget and planning, we have a bigger problem there that is causing a constitutional unjust towards the people of this country. Because it is a constitutional right to have access to the court. Now, if I have a civil matter...
And swift justice.
Yes. If I have a civil matter and I have to wait for 5, 6, 7 years to go to court, that is unjust. And look, I hope the paper that the directive that he issued as procedurally, it's 14 days. We have 14 days to comment. Even the public can comment because it's addressed to, you know, everybody. And then after 14 days, from the plan is from the 14th of April, they'll go into a trial period until the 1st of January 2027. If it's approved and it's accepted. Look, I don't know who's going to oppose that and what will be the reasons the for grounds. Opposing. I'm concerned about. I want to see who's going to oppose that proposal and what will be the reason. But the plan is by the 1st of January 2027, sure. it will be law, it will come effective.
Okay.
And now he has instructed that if this is approved by the public and it goes with signatures until the 14th of April, from the 14th of April, all court trials, if you have a date on a civil matter, from the 14th of April, they are not on the second, they call it semester. We are on the second semester of the court now. They must be removed off the roll. People who have dates, they must be removed. And when you come and ask for a date, you must come with a report of a mediation report that you attempted mediation.
Yeah.
Now when you go to court, so that you must come with a mediation report.
So that people stop abusing the court process.
Yes, yes. They must stop abusing the court process. Look, it's a good thing if it will be funded well. Again, who's going to fund that process? Like I said, primarily it's going to be the litigants, the people, the residents, the citizens. But is it going to be formalized? I don't know in what form. Is it mediation where the court and the state does not get involved? You mediate there on your own, and then you come to court, you know, for rubber stamping. If it works, it will be good for people. That's justice. And I think if people can know about this a lot, they can engage other parties if they are in dispute. Say, let's talk, let's engage. Sure. But it's very difficult. I wish I was given an opportunity. No, but I was given an opportunity to mediate because we went to the CCMA and my employer said no. Then we went for arbitration, which is, you know, in court, CCMA, they call it arbitration. In courts, it's actually adjudication of the matter. There's a judge presiding over. But I think it's a decision in the right direction. I did not know that there's that provision in the law. that a judge president can make that determination or decision. And then if it gets our signatures, I'm going to be one of the people who comment on that, actually. There's questions that I want to ask about the footing of the bill, the cost towards the people, especially people who are dependent on, what do they call this, legal aid. Legal aid.
Yes.
People who are dependent, because the majority of people in South Africa can't afford lawyers.
Yes.
So who's going to be able to aid them to enter into negotiations? Mm. And it's not the Tatos and the Botsans of this world who can go and negotiate for themselves. Mm. Majority of the people don't have a legal background or skills or ability to can engage. So the Justice Department has to tread very carefully there in order, how are they going to assist the people?
The how.
Yeah.
The how is always important.
So that's very interesting.
On that how note, we're done.
Thanks, brother man.
Where do we find you online? How do we buy your book? What's happening with the new book?
I told you. Oh, didn't I tell you on site? No, the new book I've decided to hold back. Remember, yes. I was holding for the case to end.
Sure.
Now it's been postponed. So I decided to hold back, but I had an engagement with Trevor. Somebody advised me that don't print the book yet. South Africans don't read, don't buy books. Mm. Do a documentary first.
Ah, yes.
Do a documentary, a series, have an IP on it, sell it. And when people have seen the documentary, then they will say, where is the book? Because the documentary will refer to the book. So that's, I've just flipped the plan. So
okay, so we're looking forward to a documentary.
I've started working on it very seriously. And I'm not going to wait for my case to end now. I decided to go public. If I get an IP, a funder, or somebody says, let's shoot, let's do this thing, I'm going to put it in the public space.
Agreed.
I need to eat and live. This
Agreed.
Case is not ending.
Mm.
Yeah. But it's botsangm@gmail.com and then on WhatsApp 082-485-9100 and then botsangm on social media handles.
Great stuff. Thank you very much. I appreciate you, brother.
Thank you, brother man.
Appreciate your insights as always.
Thank you.
We are done. Another episode of Wow What a Week, #Politrix, coming to you from AMP Studios, downtown Johannesburg. We are part of the Africa Podcast Network. Email waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Shout out to Trevor and Pezulu Works for all of the cinematography, Otis the Floor Fraser for all of our imaging, and Keletso Modisa Geng, our executive producer. But most importantly, you. Please remember to like, subscribe, forward links, share, and give us your opinions. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this week's Wow What a Week. Till next week, have a wow week in spite of yourselves. We're out of here.